And he reveals Spider-Man's mask to be... he reveals his mask.
He reveals his mask to be his mask. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Peter.
How come I said it, and then as soon as you did it, I was like, aw.
you bastard.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
This is kind of heavy.
That's a great line. I was watching this movie with roommate Matt, and near the beginning, it's Peter's surprise birthday party, and at the end, end of the scene, Peter sees an Aunt May's like house is being foreclosed, and he's worried about her. And before he leaves, she's like, "Happy birthday, kiddo," and gives him some money. And he tries to give it back, and she like cries, like, "You take it, don't you dare leave it here." Matt looked over at me, and I was crying.
You monster.
He's like, "Are you crying already?" I'm like, "I don't know why."
You know, like, to the stars, Bowen.
This movie, this trilogy, I don't know what. I cry in every single one of these.
You're like, I don't know why. I finger guns them every time.
Yeah. As soon as he was like, pizza time, I was like,
I need pizza. Yeah. Is this the greatest pizza movie of all time?
I don't know. I would probably say Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
Takes the cake there. But
the Michael Bay version?
No. But if for me, my opinion, my taste, Spider-Man 2 is... It's not my favorite superhero movie, but it is easily number two. It'd probably be Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2. And this movie to me, and we'll talk about it as we go along, encompasses everything that a superhero movie means. What a superhero movie needs. And like I said, to me, my taste and whatnot, my opinion. From the characters to the struggles to the villain's plot to the side plots to the character, the hero's internal struggles. Like, this movie has the epitome of all of that to me.
To you. I've never been, I mean, as you know, and before we get into it, because we've said it a billion times, oh, this movie, I was watching this movie, and to the trained eye and the person that actually looks at the title of this video, they would be like, oh, they're talking about Spider-Man, toi. But indeed, we watched Spider-Man 2 this week, for sequel month. And so this continues on our trend. This is actually, Spider-Man was one of the first episodes we ever did. We've been meaning to come
two or three.
So we've been meaning to come back to it. Mostly because a lot of our casting we didn't really like, because we were new and stupid. We've become very, very much more better now. Yes, indeed, we watched Spider-Man 2 this week. If you're not familiar with the show, if you're not familiar with us, what we do here on the podcast, every week we take a film, we watch said film, we then take to the pod to talk about that film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that film to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Same story, same idea, same everything, just different cast and crew for the modern booking. So who would direct it, who would star, an occasion we've done who compose it. Most of the time we do who would compose. But how do you replace Danny Elfman, I ask. But indeed,
how do you replace Tobey Maguire?
Easy, because it's been done. So we watched Spider-Man 2. If you go back and listen to our Spider-Man episode, you'll know that I'm not the highest on this trilogy, nor have I ever really been. I think they are great, don't get me wrong. I haven't really watched, like, Spider-Man 2, watching Spider-Man 2 today, actually, was the first time that I've watched it in years. I'm not drawn to watching it. I'd say that I've probably... that's a lie. I'd say I've probably seen The Amazing Spider-Man more times because I saw it like 3 times. But I've definitely seen Spider-Man 2 more times. I've never been... It's not that I'm not a Tobey Maguire fan, because I like Tobey Maguire as an actor, and I think he is a very memeable face. But I just never really enjoyed him as Peter Parker. And to some people, including you, he is the definition of Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. I do agree that Andrew Garfield was not a good Peter Parker. And to a degree, I think Tom Holland is great as Peter Parker, but I still get the vibes where I look at Tom Holland and I'm like, he's a good looking dude. No way he's like this down on his luck nerd all the time. That no one would like.
Yeah.
And Tobey Maguire, he puts that across.
He does. And his performance, and almost all of that has to do with the writing and directing. But I just love the direction they took Peter Parker for Tobey Maguire. He, especially in this film, he is down on his luck, struggling. He's got some angst. He's got some anger. The world is against him in this film. Everything from losing his job to failing in school to, you know, his personal life, his personal relationships are falling apart between his best friend Harry Osborn and the love of his life, Mary Jane. And it's all because he has this responsibility he feels he needs to uphold. And that responsibility is power. And that
would you
power,
say it's a great responsibility?
It is great. And it is a great responsibility, but it's also a grave responsibility he's feeling. And that's being Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
And that's what I love about this film and a superhero film in general, is it really is like a character study on the psyche of Peter Parker and Spider-Man and the dilemma of what it means to have a dual life and the tragedy that is surrounding it. This movie is fantastic for me. And I'll keep saying that because, you know, most people, I'd say, love the new take on Spider-Man, Tom Holland Spider-Man, part of the MCU, Homecoming, Far From Home, and his appearance in Civil War. They think it's superior. I disagree, but that's why I keep saying my opinion, my taste. I think, are you one of those two? You prefer old Tom Holland films as opposed to like the Sam Raimi trilogy?
Yeah, I mean, take it for what it is. They definitely pay homage, especially in Homecoming, to this movie in particular, with the boat scene in Far From Home, to the train scene in this, which we will talk about. But I definitely feel I personally enjoy Tom Holland's take. I have a fun time watching those movies. But these are a more serious take. And while there's certain things that it's Sam Raimi's style, which I like a lot, definitely comes through, and it's a little jarring because old school superhero movies, and I say that old school and they're like the 2000s, but the 2000s superhero movies, they're still trying to find their place. So there's some things that you're like, especially even in this movie, like the one scene, the freeze frame. There's like a freeze frame moment.
That's great.
But it's such a Sam Raimi moment. When Doc Ock like kills all the doctors.
Yeah, well, he doesn't either.
The arms do. But you know what I mean? Like, that's very Sam Raimi style.
That was like, that scene is like a direct callback to Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
And I love it.
So, but that's what I'm saying. Is so, like, it's all taste. It boils down to what you like and what your taste is. Now, I grew up with these movies, same as you. However, you were older to the point where I feel like they have more direct impact on you, where like I had Amazing Spider-Man, which is, and then I had these new Spider-Man movies that are part of this new MCU. Well, not new, but you know what I mean? That I love to follow, And Spider-Man's always been my favorite superhero, so tracking him into one of my favorite franchises now, yeah, I just enjoy Tom Holland's take on Spider-Man. I also liked the Miles Morales story, which I really didn't know much about. And
The multiverse. Let's not forget that.
Yeah,
the multiverse. Yeah, Spider-Man into the multiverse is a fantastic movie, one of the best Spider-Man movies. I actually, after the Sam Raimi trilogy, it goes that one for me. Multiverse, or Spider-Verse. Did I say Into the Multiverse? I'm mixing up Multiverse of Madness.
Into the unknown. Shoot, you just peaked your mic so hard you cut out so, both times.
So did you.
There we go.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can.
I prefer Spider-Pig.
Yeah. The Tom Holland Spider-Man films, Homecoming and Far From Home, wonderful movies. I enjoy them very much. They're entertaining, action-packed. They can give you the feels a little bit. It boils down to taste, and I feel
don't like have any better. Oh.
I just feel these are better made movies, and the only thing is, yeah, the effects are not as good. They don't hold up as well. Some of them are pretty good.
I mean, in the first movie, you definitely see it. In this one, they probably greenlit a bigger budget. I mean, some of the fight scenes, I know they did CG for some of the fight scenes with, like, Doc Ock's fighting Spider-Man, but it looks pretty good, even to today's standard. I also, before we, like, dive into some of the story and stuff, I am the biggest fan. I get why, like, the MCU doesn't do it, because they have all the money to throw at things. But I'm the biggest fan of mixing practical with CGI, and the fact that they did the practical effects tentacles is awesome.
Yeah, some of those are really great. There's some great bloopers, too, with those mechanical arms doing stuff, and Alfred Molina just not being able to handle it and laughing. There's, like, a bit where one of the arms feeds him a glass of whiskey, and it just keeps, like, falling over the side of his face and stuff. But yeah, exactly. As you said, it's real, though. Love that. There's even, I thought it was a little cheesy, but then I'm like, this is a comic book movie. But there's that bit where Peter and Mary Jane meet at the cafe, and Doc Ock intervenes, and Peter is, like, buried under some, like, boards and rubble, and he just kind of, like, stands up and bursts out of it.
Yeah.
It was real. Like, that was a real effect. It wasn't, like, CGI or anything, him, like, blowing out of all that shit. So I appreciated that kind of thing. As we said at the top, this is definitely a character study of Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and his internal struggle of what he wants. Does he want to be Spider-Man, or does he want to be Peter Parker, you know? And I love that about this movie, and it is a really great companion piece to the first film. It does pick up where it left off, I mean, 2 years later, so people change, things have developed, especially the relationship between, like, Harry Osborn and Peter. What does Harry say? He's like, "What's up, buddy? You never returned my calls." He's like, "Oh, I've been busy taking pictures of your friend. How is the bug these days?" Because
best friends. Oh, wrong movie.
Best
Harry.
Oh, that'll get me weeping. But in the first film, Harry Osborn believes Spider-Man killed his father, Norman Osborn, who was the Green Goblin.
Which he really doesn't have Harry a reason to a degree to think that.
Well, he saw Spider-Man drop off his dad in his room, and all of a sudden his dad was dead, so...
Why did he? Well, I always wondered that. Why did he drop? I know he, like, respected him, but, like, could have taken him to a hospital and been like, "This man died." I know he's trying to cover up that he was a Green Goblin, but...
Yeah, that was really why. He was trying to cover that up and bring him back to his home because he respected him. It would probably have been better all around if he, because he was dead, just to leave him there.
Oh.
And then someone find him. Then there'd be like who done it? But they find out in the third one. What does Bernard say? He's like,
"Boob." Do you know what movie that's from?
That's from Mr. D.
Yeah, I watched that last night.
Boob. That'd be funny if Bernard said that. Your father was killed by his own blade. Like, thanks, Bernard.
Boob.
A guest. Boob. That's good. Shit. But, so that's an interesting relationship, Harry and Peter now. And so is Mary Jane and Peter, because where they left off was they kind of revealed that they love each other, but he can't be with her, and she couldn't understand.
He's too good for her.
He's like, I'm a busy guy. I can't waste my time with girls. No time for love.
So, but time for pizza.
And it is pizza time.
It's pizza time.
That is like a great meme that when it happened in the movie, after that great closet scene where he's dropping all the brooms.
Yeah.
He's like, pizza time. I like reacted like it was a rock show. I was like, woohoo, yeah. And roommate Matt and girlfriend, she was just like, they both looked at me like, did we miss something?
Like, you idiots.
Don't you know what time it is?
It's pizza time. You immediately pull out your phone and order pizza.
Good shit.
But why don't we kind of touch base, because you're talking about how this guy, kind of a character study of Peter Parker more so, but why don't we go into Otto Octavius, because he's kind of an interesting character in all of Spider-Man. He's actually one of my favorite Spider-Man villains, as a lot of people. I'm surprised that they haven't brought him in yet to the MCU. I'm guessing they will, but they haven't even touched on it, kind of deal. Like, they haven't even name dropped him yet, which he has the capability. We talk about it all the time. Who's going to be the next Loki of the MCU? Like, the second, the mini boss kind of deal. Like, there's tons of forgettable MCU villains, but then Loki was like the precursor to Thanos. He was the first big bad, Loki was. Right. So who's going to be the next big bad? Early big bad, rather. And Doc Ock is right up there with, like, Doctor Doom for me, with having, and, like, not really the Green Goblin, because, like, comic book Green Goblin's a little different than movie Green Goblin. In my opinion, I think that Harry Osborn would be pretty cool, or Norman Osborn would be pretty cool, like, being the next big bad. But I think, like, Doc Ock being, like, super smart and whatnot, maybe trying to, like, I would love to see him maybe trying to, like, come in, take over Stark Industries. So that'd be pretty cool. And using, like, Iron Man tech to build his arms. But they do a good job at pulling him into this universe and making it pretty realistic.
Oh, yeah. I love Dr. Octopus as a character. I was asked the other day who's my favorite Marvel villain. And I honestly was, it took a while, but I decided on Dr. Octopus, and it's mainly because of this movie.
Yeah, and then they grabbed you, and slowly out of them, the parasite, what is it that Venom's is? Symbiote came out of them. Yeah. Said, we are Venom, and ate you.
That's right.
Called you a turd in the wind.
But Dr. Octopus, it's really because of this movie. He's such like a tragic character, because he's like this brilliant scientist, loves his wife. I really enjoy that scene between Peter, Otto Octavius, and his wife Rosie. You know, just enjoying some tea, talking about poetry, laughing, and it's just a great little like get to know you scene. It was like the scene where the characters really connect. And that's what makes a villain-hero dynamic so interesting, is stuff like that. But he's pursuing his life's work, his life's dream. And things go awry with that. And that's what I was saying is so tragic. Like, because of his dream, and he miscalculated, it caused his career to be ruined, and it caused his life to be ruined because of his mistake. It killed his wife, and it fused these mechanical arms to his spine and kind of took over his mind, which is pretty brilliant. And yeah, he just, it says it all in the shot after he, the arms kill those doctors, like we said earlier, that Evil Dead 2 callback. When he takes off the bandage and he sees the arms attached to him, and he's like, nah. And the arms scream too. It's just like, it sums it all up right there.
Would it have been better if he would have woken up before he killed everyone and he went, where's Padme? Is where's she Rosie? Safe?
I saw her. She was alive. She just...
I felt it.
Made you feel it, did he? No, so yeah. And that's what makes him so interesting, is because he isn't evil to be evil. He is pursuing his goal and his dream of completing this machine, but for all the wrong reasons. And a lot of it has to do with those arms kind of taking over his train of thought.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of different than the the comics and what and other forms of media. These claws have their own characteristics, and they kind of take over his, part of his mind, and they're their own being, I guess, whereas in other forms it's he controls them with his thoughts, which is cool. They're self-aware, and yeah, he wants to pursue rebuilding the machine because he wants to make perpetual energy. He wants to create another sun, so there's just an infinite amount of energy that they can recycle and reuse, and it'd be a gift for the good of mankind.
The good of mankind, the good of us all.
The greater good.
Indeed.
And, yeah, and that's just an interesting just dilemma between Dr. Otto Octavius kind of finding the balance of Otto Octavius and Doc Ock. On the opposite end, you got Peter balancing between Peter and Spider-Man. And then all the subplots in between. There's a subplot between Peter and Mary Jane. Like, is there love there? Is there not? Like, you have to make up your mind. And then there's a subplot between Harry and Spider-Man. Like, he is just so obsessed with finding Spider-Man and avenging his father's death. And then there's a subplot between Peter and Aunt May.
Peter!
Aunt May, there's a that heart-wrenching scene where she feels like it's her fault that her husband, Uncle Ben, died that night. You wanted to take the subway to go study at the library, but he wanted to drive you, and if I would have just stopped him, he would have been having tea here with us. And Peter reveals what actually happened that night, and it was kind of his fault that events played out the way they did. And that look on Aunt May's face is just brutal. But I might cry even saying it. Next time they kind of apologize to each other, Aunt May and Peter. She gives one of the best speeches, and I have it memorized. Would you like to hear it?
Indeed.
We need a hero. Courageous, sacrificing people. Setting examples for all of us. Everybody loves a hero. People line up for them, cheer for them, scream their names, and years later tell how they stood in the rain for hours just to get a glimpse of the one who told them to hold on a second longer. I believe there's a hero in all of us that keeps us honest, gives us strength, makes us noble, and finally gets us to die with pride, even though sometimes we have to be steady and give up the things we want most, even our dreams. Oh, and that's kind of the calling, the spur speech that Peter needed to decide, I have to be Spider-Man. Like, I choose to be now. Because that was what was great about the movie. Also, I say this is what's great about the movie. The whole movie's fucking great. When he's going through all that struggle of he wants his normal life, but he's Spider-Man. He starts to lose his powers. He could be slinging web across the city, and all of a sudden nothing's shooting out, and he just falls to I would say his death, but it's just to pain. And it's just interesting that he has a choice, basically. He can choose to be Spider-Man. And ultimately, he does choose not to be Spider-Man. So we do get to see him live his normal life. But what was great was when he was Spider-Man, he was so conflicted that he should be Peter Parker.
Yeah.
But now that he's Peter Parker, he's so conflicted that he should probably be Spider-Man. And I just love that about this movie.
I mean, they do. There isn't a lot in at the beginning. The pacing seems different than the first one because at the beginning, it's a lot. It's not as much like action and build. It's more like we've said a couple times now, a character study, like getting to know what's going on in Peter's life and building up. So when you get later payoffs and stuff, it all comes full circle. I will say, though, because you said how you like the fact that he's not the hero, like he decides to not be a hero for a while, and you do see cool moments like with the hot dog moment,
right,
with the cop car going by and stuff.
Person getting mugged.
Yeah, like you almost on one level you're like, what are you doing? Like, be the hero that you know you can be. But on the other side, you're like, he's earned the ability to be normal or try to be normal kind of deal, you know? And he does kind of get thrust into it, but again, with great power comes great responsibility.
And I do like the callback scene to the first film, so much so, like, it, as in a callback, roommate Matt was like, isn't this in the first movie? And it's the fire scene. There's an apartment building that's on fire. And Peter Parker, no spider powers. He runs in to save a little girl in there successfully. And that's kind of a callback to the first film where there was a fire scene in an apartment building and he was Spider-Man and he saved the day. But only this time, it turns out there was another person in that building that couldn't make it out. And he just feels that weight that he could have done more. And I believe it's the next scene is that Aunt May speech. So yeah, it's just all around great struggles for a hero character, a hero who has, like, not in the sense of I have superpowers, therefore I'm a hero. It's what it really means to be a hero. Love that kind of stuff that they present in this movie, which leads to one of my favorite action scenes ever, and that is the train sequence, the fight between Spider-Man and Doc Ock.
Yeah, that I haven't actually watched. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just glitched out for a second.
Okay, I haven't actually watched that scene in a long time. I've watched the when he saves the train a couple times, but I haven't watched the fight. And the fight is really, really good. Like it's choreographed and it's directed, right? Because there is CGI moments throughout, but it's staged like ridiculously well and flows really nice.
Oh yeah, and what's great about it is the stakes. So
yeah.
Dr. Octopus, he needs more tritium to create or to finish his invention. And he goes to Harry Osborn and Harry makes a deal with him. I'll give you the tritium if you bring me Spider-Man alive. So Dr. Octopus and Spider-Man are fighting and Ock creates a situation for Spider-Man. The train has no brakes. It's going to derail. All these people are going to die. And they're still fighting on top of this moving train, which is awesome. But I love that bit where Dr. Octopus is grabbing people from the train and throwing them at Spider-Man. And he's like having to catch them. Good stuff. But ultimately, Dr. Octopus leaves. Like, you have a train to catch. And this moment here, once again, for me, my taste, my opinion, is the culmination of the superhero genre. like what it means to be a superhero in film. One, Spider-Man, he loses his mask. So he's part Peter Parker, part Spider-Man. He's both of his dual identities. He's fighting this great villain, this conflicted character, who doesn't believe he's evil, and which creates him for an interesting character. And their relationship, you know, between the two is pretty great. They don't know who each other is quite yet, or he doesn't know that he's Peter Parker. But the dilemma of saving this train full of people, and that great scene where Spider-Man's shooting the webs, he's catching it, and probably one of the greatest screams in cinema. Him holding onto those webs and screaming, and his muscles are flexing and tearing his suit, and he has that just Tobey Maguire poop face, you know?
What if he was doing that, but we edited out him yelling and put in Harry's scream from Home Alone? Just,
oh, I thought you meant Harry from Dumb and Dumber.
No, or even Harry, his scream from the second one when he gets electrocuted. He's like, oh, oh, oh.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty good.
But yeah, that just primal, guttural, like, that scream, that primordial scream.
Primordial ooze.
To stop that train. And even after the train stops, he's still like holding on and like twitching and flexing, like still holding on, and he passes out. Yeah. And just that's probably my favorite scene in any superhero movie. That and like portals from Endgame.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you calm down there.
No, it is definitely my favorite scene in any superhero movie. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, other ones would be like the portal scene in Endgame. I'm trying to think of just some other ones off the top of my head, which is kind of hard to do. This is a little silly, but I really like the credit opening for Batman Returns. And also, yep, on the subject of Batman Returns, the Batman Mask of the Phantasm, the explosion at the World of the Future in the finale of that film, and the Joker screaming his head off laughing. Those are some of my favorite moments in superhero films. Off the top of my head, there's a plethora of others I'm just not thinking of right now, but definitely the culmination of what a superhero movie is to me is that train scene.
I love that scene. Like I said, that was the first time I watched that in a long time, and just the action of it was really good. And then it ultimately, which he gets that victory, right? He stops it and saves everyone, and it's great when it, I like the, well, he wakes up and realizes like they, his identity's been basically revealed, and he like touches his face. Yeah. I like that. But then they get his mask on and everything, and they say they won't tell, and you get another, like, you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us moment. Yeah, from the first one.
Have it your way, then.
Yeah, and then he actually beats Spider-Man, which is pretty cool. I'm always a fan of, like, a hero losing every now and again. Just because, you know me, if it's too similar, I lose interest after a while, if there's no stakes, and sometimes superhero movies can feel that way.
Gives them something to keep striving for, chasing after.
Yeah.
So nothing's too easy for the one who has these superpowers. But yeah, he delivers the goods. Doc Ock delivers Spider-Man to Harry, wrapped in barbed wire. And collects his tritium and disappears. And now old Harry baby, who has nothing left but Spider-Man, is going to exact his revenge. And he reveals Spider-Man's mask to be... he reveals his mask.
He reveals his mask to be his mask.
And then he takes it off. And
he grows a beard and then shaves it off.
And it turns out to be his best friend, Peter Parker, and he is shocked.
You bastard.
Peter, you killed my father.
Prepare to die.
And he is in shock and reluctantly helps Peter to where Doc Ock is because he has Mary Jane. And that Mary Jane, she's one to get into trouble, isn't she?
Always.
And, yeah, then there's your finale scene, which is also really great. Octavius has completed his invention, but it's once again just too unstable, and it's going to swallow up all of New York City. And Peter shows up, or Spider-Man shows up to save the day, and he reveals his mask, removes his mask, and, you know, Octopus, that's not his name, Dr. Octopus, he sees it's Peter Parker.
Dr. Octopussy.
Yeah. Parker, brilliant but lazy. Like, I love that realization. I love that line. And they decide to, now that the inhibitor chip has, you know, has been broken since the beginning of the film, and he had no control over these arms, he forces the arms, like, listen to me now. And he wants to help Spider-Man stop his own madness. He won't die a monster.
Yeah.
And there's that other bit you were alluding to earlier when you're like, this is heavy.
Yeah.
Which is a great Spider-Man line. When he goes to save Mary Jane from that crushing, you know, wall. But also Mary Jane finally realizes Spider-Man is Peter Parker. And the look she gives is like a look like, I am so surprised, but this makes so much sense.
I knew it.
It's like, somehow I knew it. It was your kiss, your lips.
Oh, yes, it'll make a great cook.
You take off of that mask. Dr. Octopus drowns the tritium. What do you call the machine? I can't even remember. The fusion reactor?
Yeah, it's like basically making another sun, like an unlimited source of energy.
Yeah, yeah. And he drowns it in the river, which ultimately drowns him too, which I was kind of surprised by when I first saw it in the theater. I remember, like, I was like, how did he die so fast? Like, he's just like, he throws it and it kind of collapses on top of him a little bit, but like the almost immediate next scene is just him floating to the bottom of the river. I was like, how did he die that fast? Unless he chose to drown, you know, he is a tragic character. Like, everything he loved, his dream, well, his career, his wife, the love of his life.
He just threw like a giant arc reactor, for lack of a better term, giant mechanical thing into water. He could have just like electrocuted the hell out of himself. He also had giant mechanical arms attached like directly to his spine.
He just sunk to the bottom.
Yeah, maybe they were damaged and they don't like water. That's what I always say. Like, Wolverine, like, you can't, if you drop Wolverine in water, he's dead. Like, he can't swim. He's just heavy.
That's not true. That happened in X-Men Days of Future Past.
Happened in X-Men Origins, too. They, like, skip him. He jumps out of that plane. But at the same time, I'm like,
they skip him.
They skip him. He does. He, like, jumps out of the plane and skips.
Yeah, it's like skipping stones.
Yeah. That's not how this works. But that's to say, you could pretty much say that about everything in that movie, X-Men Origins.
So we come to the finale of the film. We are now, Peter, yeah, who are you?
Mary Jane. Peter.
Mary Jane finally is able to accept why they can't be together. Because if anyone were to find out, any of Spider-Man's enemies found out who she was, she would always be in danger. Turns out she's always in danger anyway. And she goes to get married, but she's a runaway bride and turns up at Peter's door. She's always been standing in his door. And they end up together, which is a wonderful, happy ending. And she's, you know, I want to face these challenges with you, these dangers with you. Then there's police flying about. A crisis has occurred and Spider-Man's got to go. And what does Mary Jane say?
Go get him, Tiger.
Hello?
Go get him, Tiger.
Okay. Did you say it?
Yeah, I was like, go get him, Tiger.
It's just, there's nothing. Interesting enough, the final shot of this movie is of Mary Jane's, like, solemn face. Like, this is what my life will be now. And
I'll be bitter about it.
Yeah. And that kind of closes out Spider-Man 2, but I want to give out three character call-outs, some, like, honorable mentions of how great they are. The cameo, Bruce Campbell's cameo as the obnoxious usher.
Yeah.
Brilliant writing, brilliantly played by him. Mr. Dickovich, Peter's landlord. He's like, hi, what's high? Can I spend it? Great. And then, of course, J. Jonah Jameson, played brilliantly by J.K. Simmons.
There's a reason that they didn't recast him.
Exactly. He is so, so good in this movie. He's like, I'll pay $100 for it. $300. That's outrageous. Done. He's so good in this movie.
I like the first one. He's like, I'll just take my photos elsewhere. He's just like, wait, let me see him again. Give him standard freelancer rate.
Meat. I'll give you a box of Christmas meat.
I would gladly accept that. If someone offered me Christmas meats, I'd be like, okay.
Food crisis, scare city. Some food got poisoned? I'm a little nauseous, yeah. Great stuff. And I just love his bit throughout each of these films, because he's also torn. He wants to tear down Spider-Man, and he sees him as a menace. And ultimately, when Peter does decide not to be Spider-Man, throws his suit away, which movie factoid, that alley that he throws his suit in the garbage can, that is the same alley that Peter and Mary Jane have their iconic kiss in the first movie. He feels like he drove Spider-Man to quit. But then near the finale, he's like, maybe we did need Spider-Man. But then he takes his suit back. He's like, he's a thief, a menace. I want Spider-Man. He's great. And I'm glad they brought him back, and they're going to continue to bring him back. The rumor also now, pardon me, I burped.
You need to fucking mute, Mike. But
the rumor now is that Willem Dafoe might return to the Marvel universe, but now in the MCU, to the Spider-Man world.
Godspeed, Spider-Man.
Unfortunately, the rumor is he would be playing Electro, but why not bring him back as Norman Osborn? Why not?
Avenge me!
Is it too, like on the nose?
The one's too iconic. Don't have him play it again, because then people will just compare him and be like, he was better in this version. Yeah, he's playing the same character.
I wonder, with everything that's going on with this, like, multiverse, like, if he's, like, plucked from, you know, his timeline or something before he dies.
Perhaps.
You know, who knows?
There was a rumor that Tobey Maguire has been in contact with people at Sony about reprising his role.
I'm so excited. I hope he does.
I think, I know you're not a big Andrew Garfield fan, but if there was a moment, where you had, like, they got someone to, like, play Miles Morales, and then they have, like, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, and Tom Holland, all four of them together in Spider-Man costumes, man, I'm ready. Like, that'd be awesome.
That'd be a great moment. And I just love Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, Peter Parker. I love the way he portrays the character. And especially in this film, just the dilemma, the crisis of his character. I keep harping on in such a positive way, because it really gets me in the feels. But Tobey Maguire, he almost wasn't Spider-Man in the sequel. After the first film, he went on to do Seabiscuit.
Yeah.
And he developed, like, severe back pains, like nerve damage from riding horses and stuff. And it was like in doubt that he would return. And Jake Gyllenhaal was lined up to play Spider-Man. And he had already like begun preparing for the role. Like he was on board, but Maguire decided to join in after all. And
like, I'm not letting this guy sleep with my wife.
And isn't that funny? They ended up in Brothers a few years after that movie together. Also, Tobey Maguire's agent made a hell of a deal. I think he got like $25 million to play Spider-Man again.
A million?
But what's funny is that knowing that information about his severe back pains, and then that bit in the movie where he's like trying to sling web and he's like, "I'm back!" And he falls and he's like, "Oh, my back! My back! Good shit.
Good stuff. Well, speaking on different people playing Spider-Man, why don't we go ahead and submit the movie to the factory? So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same idea, everything like that. Just different cast and crew for the modern booking. So for today's movie factory, I'm thinking we do director, composer, Spider-Man, Doc Ock, and Mary Jane. Are you good with that?
Let's do it.
Alrighty, so who do you have tapped for your director?
I was going to ask you the same thing.
So my pick isn't super, super original. It is someone that I don't think we have used for this podcast yet. And that is a man by the name of, and I'm just going to hopefully pronounce it right, Ruben Fleischer.
I tried to use him for something forever ago.
Well, he is the director of Venom, so that's he's handled superhero movies before. Now he's also this is what really sealed it for me, because Venom, I haven't actually watched Venom in its entirety. I started it. But what actually sold it for me is the fact that he directed Zombieland 1 and 2, and there's just the dark comedy. Like, he has the way of doing like comedy with seriousness kind of deal, and I feel like that's a necessity with Spider-Man, especially even with this movie, because there are funny moments throughout this movie, but then there's kind of dark moments, and there's a lot of different feels throughout, and I feel like he could navigate that pretty well. And with him helming Venom, and I'm assuming he's going to helm Venom 2, because the first Venom movie was a pretty big success.
Now, Andy Serkis.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah. You are right. Yeah. Regardless, Venom was a success. He doesn't do many movies. Those are like his three biggest movies. He does a lot more TV shows, like Santa Clarita Diet. He did a couple episodes of that. Did a couple other Netflix shows. Ruben Fleischer.
Nice. I am going with James Wan.
Ew.
Now, James Wan, he's known for, Saw and Insidious and the Conjuring films.
And Fast and Furious movies.
And he's done Fast and Furious 7. He's also recently done Aquaman. And Aquaman, say what you want about it, was a fun, entertaining film. And it just brought to life this very difficult subject matter, which is Aquaman. But I just love his directing style, especially in his horror films. I just watched Conjuring recently, a couple days ago, and just such a well-crafted film. So behind the camera and his directing, I love his stuff. And I kind of like the idea of him coming from a horror background and branching into like big budget action films. Because that's what Sam Raimi did. He started just low-budget horror films, and now he's directed the Spider-Man trilogy and beyond. So I'm going with James Wan.
Alrighty. Well, go ahead and flip me for it, because I do like your pick.
Heads you, tails me.
Okay.
And we got... Hey, it's tails.
Alrighty.
James Wan, baby.
Alright, then, with that being said, who got tapped to replace old Danny Elfman? Who did we pick last year? Do you remember?
I don't. I usually do a little research before we do sequel month, but I neglected to do that this year. Unless, no, it wouldn't be in your little notebook, would it?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, we started doing that like shortly after we started. It'd be easy to find because it would be at the beginning, I suppose. Let's see. You started with Conan.
Yeah, that was several episodes in.
Yeah, your handwriting is so hard to understand, too.
Yes, indeed.
Goes right into spooky month. So, anywho, we got James Newton Howard for me for music. He's one of my favorite composers. I trust any kind of work he does. Some of my favorites are the work he does with M. Night Shyamalan films.
Yeah.
Beautiful music. And I oozed for Danny Elfman's score in these Spider-Man movies. Like, as soon as the movie starts, I'm just like, this is why these movies are better than any of the Tom Holland movies. And it's the score. That Spider-Man theme is just so good. So, yeah, replacing Danny Elfman's really difficult, but it's those moments when he's slinging web and the chorus is coming in like, oh, oh, that's Batman. But anyhow, it's so hard to replace Danny Elfman for Spider-Man, so I just chose to use James Newton Howard, who's up there as one of my favorite composers.
So for mine, I wanted to try and find someone we've never used before, and I looked up composers that were similar to the style of Danny Elfman, or ones that have been seen as like somewhat close to that. So I ended up going with John Debney. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or not.
He does sound familiar. What kind of work has he done?
So he did things like Iron Man 2. He did Predators most recently. Things like Passion of the Christ. So he's done some serious films, but then he's also did like, are done, Hocus Pocus, things like Dora, the Explorer, the live-action movie, the 2016 Jungle Book live-action film, Elf, Liar Liar. So I was honestly, I thought of Elf. As soon as I saw Elf, I was like, his music in Elf is pretty whimsical. And Hocus Pocus, you have some cool music in that, whimsical music. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen Predators or not. But he does the action in that pretty good, and the darker tones. The same with Iron Man 2. So John Debney.
All right. Let's see what the coin of truth has for you and me. And it is Tails once again. It's all my right. Spider-Man movie.
All righty. Well, then, indeed, who you have to play Mary Jane?
So this is my pick, and you can tell me if it's like a cheap cop-out answer. And I have a hard time my brain pronouncing her first name, but Shailene Woodley.
It has a cop out. It's Shailene Woodley.
I do really like her as an actress. She's great in The Descendants, and she's, you know, very popular from her Divergent series. But she was, this is why it could be cheap, she was cast as Mary Jane Watson for the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man movies, and she was going to be a main fixture in that third movie that never happened. And they did film a scene with her in Amazing Spider-Man 2, which ultimately got cut from the movie altogether. So she never got that chance to play this iconic character, and I would like to see her have that chance. So I was like, why not put her in our Spider-Man 2?
So I tried to go with a little young. I know they're in college in this film, or you know, out of high school. So I went with an actress who hasn't been in a lot. But if you actually look her up, we watched one episode of the show a while back, and I thought she was really good. And then I actually doing research, I was like, I wonder who like other people think is a good fixture for Mary Jane. So I looked up fan casting just to see what other people were saying, and her name actually popped up pretty high on a lot of people's lists. I was like, I did like her. I think she would be a good fit. That's Kiernan Shipka from The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I don't know if you've seen. She plays Sabrina the Teenage Witch in that show.
Oh, yeah.
On Netflix. And she's 20, so she's a little younger. But still, that's, I think, about how old Mary Jane's supposed to be. In this one, if not a little older, but she does a good job. I only watched one episode, but she was very good in that. So I went with Kiernan Shipka.
Okay, let's figure out who's going to be, though. Your more original pick or my cop-out pick?
Yeah.
And we got the cop-out.
Jesus. All right. Then let's do Spider-Man first and then Doc Ock.
Okay. That'll be different because we did do Spider-Man before, and I do remember who we chose last time.
Aaron Taylor Johnson, sadly.
Yeah, last time the pick was between Aaron Taylor Johnson and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah. And yeah, and like looking back, I'm like, that was not a good idea. And either way, just this didn't feel right. So this is kind of a redemption one. And I went with Grant Gustin. Are you familiar with Grant Gustin?
I've heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's popular in that CW Flash show.
Yeah.
So he's got the right look. He's definitely got the right attitude. He's familiar with the genre. But he has shown through that show he has like all the facets of what could make a good Spider-Man. He can show the emotional side. He can do the action side. He can show the nerdy side and the witty side. The cheesy jokes here and there. He can show the love side. And yes, I am pretty much strictly basing it off of his character as the Flash. That's all I've really been familiar with him as. But this is kind of dipping into what I said with my pick for Mary Jane. She never got to portray that character. Grant Gustin didn't get to portray Flash on the big screen.
Yeah.
They went with Ezra Miller, even though Grant Gustin was established as the character at that point. The show was going on and is still going on. And I would just like to see him be able to show those acting chops in the superhero world with Spider-Man, something big and fancy.
So who I went for here is someone who is playing a superhero right now as well in a DC TV show, and that's Brenton Thwaites. He plays Dick Grayson in the Titans TV show, which he's become kind of infamous for his fuck Batman line. You've seen him in that. I've seen clips of him playing Robin. I've seen clips of that show. I actually kind of want to watch that show, but I'm really bad at watching TV shows. But he is in other things as well that you've probably heard of. And this is when it may get like, ooh, he was in things like The Giver. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tells No Tales. He's in Maleficent. He played Prince Philip. And then he was in Gods of Egypt. Thank God for that movie. But he's in a lot of other movies as well. He was things like Oculus and whatnot. But right now, that's his big role, playing Robin. I think he's a good fit, even in his look, I think, would fit the role pretty well. So, Brenton Thwaites.
Let's find out if the coin likes you this time.
Probably not.
It actually does.
Hey, there it is. Alrighty. Then last up here, Doc Ock. Who you got?
I'm actually pretty proud of my Doc Ock. Alfred Molina is so perfect as Dr. Octopus. So this is one of those, like, it might as well tear my fingernails out of my body instead of making me pick. But I'm pretty happy with this pick, and it kind of ties in with James Wan, and that's Patrick Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. I love Patrick Wilson. He's great in everything I've seen him in, from Watchmen to the smaller things that he's in, like, I guess not smaller. I was going to say Phantom of the Opera. I was going to say he's not, like, the lead. But his characters in Insidious and The Conjuring, he's, like, so sympathetic, but he can show he has this dark side, like in Insidious 2. Great
Orm.
Act.
Orm.
Yeah, he... that's right. Oh, yeah, and he was the main villain in Aquaman. Can you imagine him hitting Spider-Man with a big bag of coins, like he does in that bank fight scene, and goes like, ha! And goes up to him and says, you are an ungrateful bitch.
Yes.
Perfect.
What about this, though? What about if he does that, he picks him up, and instead he says, I am the one who knocks? Because my pick is Bryan Cranston. Oh, bald Bryan Cranston coming in. Bryan Cranston's...
Why does he have to be bald?
Because I want him to be. So he can wear the bowl cut wig. The proper bowl cut wig. Bryan Cranston with a straight haired bowl cut. But yeah, Bryan Cranston, I think it just him playing like a more higher end Mr. White. and also have some of that paranoia from Godzilla. I think Bryan Cranston would actually be a really good Doc Ock.
But then the fatherly side, like in Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, yeah. And he was in that movie with Kevin Hart, where he can't...
The upside.
Yeah, yeah. And so he has his... Because has there been a rendition where Doc Ock couldn't walk, so he made the arms? Or has it always been...
That was in some of the comics, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember if the video game was getting at that. In the video game Spider-Man.
Don't spoil it.
Dr. Octopus is a character, and Peter helps him because he's, like, developing a disease that's, like, he's not going to be able to use his arms and legs soon.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't really touch on that too much.
Gotcha. But, yeah, I went with Bryan Cranston.
All right, well, let's see what our coin goes with. Patrick Wilson or Bryan Cranston? That's a good pick, though, either way. And it is Bryan Cranston.
Hey, all right, I won out with the big ones. So, Spider-Man 2 remake, we got James Wan helm in it, James Newton Howard composing, Mary Jane played by Shailene Woodley, Doc Ock played by Bryan Cranston, and Brenton Thwaites playing Spider-Man. So that is our factory. Indeed, so we are ready to close out the show if you are. Do you have anything else you want to touch on?
If Jimmy Stewart played a character in Spider-Man 2, who would he be?
Jimmy would be the maitre d'. Shoelace, bow tie. Yeah. He'd tell him. He would be an original character. He'd be sitting inside the restaurant when Doc Ock throws the car, and he'd go, "Look at that guy out the window."
I just want him as like a bystander during the presentation of Dr. Otto Octavius's machine, and everything's going to hell, and that glass starts to break. He's like, "Oh, watch out for that glass from the window."
Yeah, yeah.
And she doesn't listen. She doesn't listen.
No, yeah, for sure. Alrighty, well, that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audio Boom. That is our primary site. That's where we post the show to, and subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts, you can find us there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at the Bros Movie Pod. That's where we're going to be posting most of our content and clips and things like that, and what we're going to be watching. You can also find us on Facebook.
You go to Facebook and type in the Brothers Movie Factory. We'll be there. Like us, share what we post. I like to make memes that go along with the movies we're watching each and every week, as well as links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, Audio Boom, Spotify, Twitter, and that. And also, be sure to tune in to the podcast September 4th. We are doing an interview with Matt Provencal, actor, creator, and YouTube personality. He's making a short film, a pilot, for a project of his called Kingsblade, and he's raising money for it. So we're creating awareness, did a great interview, and you'll all be able to hear that September 4th, so tune in.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it, but until next week, brothers...
Brothers.